This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We need to focus, and we're not focused. We're going to talk about that to open up the show tonight. We're going to talk about the declassification of the Crossfire Hurricane documents. Maybe a heavy talk about the budget coming. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk. Let's have a Daddy Jesse talk. Pull up a chair. Let's talk. Because something bad just happened yesterday, and we need to address it. Before I get to the bad, I know this isn't about the signal chat stuff and things like that. We're moving off of that. Before I get to the bad, have you ever known anybody who struggles with addiction of some kind? Maybe it's drugs or alcohol or something like that. So let's make it about alcohol, because that's a common struggle. Maybe it's something you struggle with. By the way, keep struggling. You overcome. Anyway, maybe that's a struggle you are aware of. Let's say somebody's been drinking a fifth of whiskey every day for 20 years. All right, it's bad. And they decide they want to clean it up. All right. And they go one day without a fifth of whiskey. Maybe it's even a Friday night. That'd be the night where they really go crazy. And they decide, I'm going to clean up my life. I'm not having any today. And they skip that day. Then they go back and have another one on Saturday. Okay, so let's discuss this, because this is going to be about us and elections. Did that one day, did it mean nothing? Of course not. That's a great thing. And if that's you, if you've done something like this, be proud of yourself. It's not easy to break the cycle and take a day off. That's a good thing. But did that one day solve your alcohol problem? No, of course not. You won one battle in a million battles, and you have got to stay focused and win a lot more. We, the United States of America, we went out in November and we rejected American communism. The American people, not just you and me, not just the politically involved, the American people, we watched in horror as the Biden administration tore this country apart every way they could, and the American people, and I'm proud of us for that, we went out in one election and said, no more, enough. And the results were overwhelming. County after county after county, every county went to the right. Everyone said, I've had enough of this garbage, enough. And I was very proud of us, and I remain very proud of us for that day. For a day, we did good, and we should be proud of it. However, as I have said, I've said a million times this. I said it before the election. I've said it since the election. I will say it till the day they kick me off the air. Saving a country or losing a country, it is not an event. There's not a Super Bowl. There's not a one-time thing. It's a process. It's not an event. It's a process. A presidential election, yes, it's critically important, just like that Friday where you skipped the whiskey. It did not fix everything by a mile. And I say this because, well, Trump signed an executive order yesterday, and everyone's making a big deal of it. Here it was.
We believe that this executive order is the farthest reaching executive action taken in the history of the Republic to secure our elections. Among numerous other aspects of this executive order, this is going to cut down on illegal immigrants on the voter rolls, ensure that the Department of Homeland Security and the data that they have available is being fully weaponized to ensure that illegal immigrants aren't voting. This will include a citizenship question on the federal voting form for the first time. This executive order instructs the EAC to cut federal funding to states that don't take reasonable steps to secure their election This calls on the Department of Justice to vigorously prosecute election crimes, particularly in states that we don't believe are in compliance with federal law around election integrity. I could go on and on for a while, sir, but compliance with National Election Day rules, cracking down and investigating and prosecuting foreign interference in our elections, revoking President Biden's Executive Order 14019, which essentially weaponized government to corrupt and pollute our election process. There's a lot in here, but we believe that these are very important steps that we need to be taking as an administration at your direction to ensure that our elections are as secure as they possibly can be.
Okay. Sounds good. I see a lot of, yeah! Go Trump! Woo! Okay. We're going to secure our elections. Why don't we show up and vote for them then? We had a huge election. It wasn't sexy, but a huge election in Pennsylvania. For the state house, it wasn't for national, but Pennsylvania, the critical swing state, the laws, the things they pass in Pennsylvania will undoubtedly affect whether or not we can win presidential elections and things like that. A critical special election. Special election in a district Trump won by 16 points in November. And the results of this special election were to decide, did decide, who would control the Pennsylvania legislature. You realize that? Those were the stakes of the game. And this was a gimme for us. Plus 16 Trump district? Surely we got that in the bag, right? We lost. Didn't even show up. I think we lost by less than 500 votes last time I looked. I know there's still some moving some numbers around, but less than 500 votes, we lost. Oh, I know. I know we elected Donald Trump, and it is human nature when you get a win like that, especially when it's for the office of the presidency. It's human nature to go sit back and go, oh, whew, finally, I'm glad we saved this place. Anyway, March Madness is on. I get it. But if that is going to be our attitude, we're going to lose this country. It's true. You can't save the country by only showing up to vote when Donald Trump is on the ballot. We cannot continue to dust off our MAGA hats once every 4 years and show up when Trump's running for president and save the United States of America. The American communist doesn't do that. The American communist, I'll tell you this, I'll tell you a little story here before I let you go, because we have a huge show for you tonight. I've told you this story maybe before, but I have a bunch of former communists who watch us here on I'm Right, listen to the radio show. And I had one, a woman, she emailed in the show. You want to hear the level of commitment we're up against? She, former communist, she used to print out all the different local elections, not the sexy stuff, not even Congress or Senate, every special election, every local election, every time there was something on the ballot, a proposal of some kind, she would create printouts of everything, and she would send them out to everybody in her group, everybody she knew. Hey, here are your marching orders. Make sure you show up here. Make sure you show up there. Organizing, getting people showing up. And one time, she missed one. Now, this wasn't a presidential election. We're not talking Hillary Barack on the ballot. It wasn't Senate. It wasn't anything you or I would care about at all. A local prop election that didn't matter. This communist was so distraught, former communist, want to give her credit. This communist was so distraught about missing one meaningless local election that she had to go see a shrink to get over the horrible guilt she felt about missing one local election. I know that going to battle, political battle, power battles for your country, I know it's exhausting. Look, I love this, as you can tell. I do this for a living. I'm just like you. I have days where I get home and I'm just tired of it. I don't care anymore. I want to take a night off. I want to take a week off. I'm tired of the fighting and the yelling. Can I just watch some sport? I know. I go through the exact same thing you go through. I know. But the communist is not tired. He's not tired at all. I'll tell you what. I'll show you this little video. It's a one of these man on the street videos where they're talking to people about racism and whatnot. And yes, it's all crazy and they're hypocrites and they're nut jobs, and I understand all that. Set all that stuff aside as you watch this video. I want you to watch the level of commitment, of mental, spiritual commitment we're up against. This is what we're up against.
Do you have an opinion on voter ID laws?
Yeah, they're usually pretty racist and they're bad.
I think voter ID laws are a way to perpetuate racism.
Would you say they're, would you go as far as say they're, those laws are racist?
For sure.
Do you think it suppresses the African-American vote?
Definitely. Because they're less likely to have state IDs.
Minority voters are less likely to have the kinds of IDs that have been described or required.
These type of people don't live in areas with easy access to DMVs or other places where they can get identification.
Now I'm here in East Harlem to ask black people their thoughts on what you just heard. Do you have ID normally? You carry ID around?
Yes, I have state ID.
Do you carry ID?
Yes, I do.
Do you know anybody, who, any black person who doesn't carry ID?
No. Everyone that I know has an ID. Why would they think we don't have ID?
That's a lie. Why would they say that?
Do you have ID?
Yes.
Because I have my ID and my friends have their ID, so like, we know what we need to carry around.
Everybody that I know have ID. Like, that's one of the things you need to walk around with New York with, ID.
Do you know any black adult who does not have ID?
No, I don't.
So you can point out they're crazy, they're nuts, they believe things that aren't real. All that stuff is true. But these people who believe all these crazy things that aren't real, black people can't even get ID. Crazy, evil, nutty as they may be, they vote every single time with a purpose, with a commitment. They're out there ensuring your will, your vote is canceled. We must get focused. We must get off the couch for elections that aren't sexy, that don't involve Donald Trump, that don't involve the presidency, that don't involve federal elections at all. Us getting outvoted in a district that should have been a gimme, giving up control of the most important swing state in the country. Embarrassing. Embarrassing for us. We have to do better. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an incredible show for you here tonight. We're going to talk actually to so many people. We're going to talk to Ryan Gerdusky about Pennsylvania, about legwork, about doing the work on the ground. Before we talk to Ryan about that, let me talk to you about Dream Powder from Beam. Dream Powder will have you sleeping like a baby every single night. Every single night. And the thing about taking something to sleep is there's a million things out there. I know that. You can ask your doctor for something. He'll give you a pill bottle. You can go to the gas station and get something to sleep. But all those things have the same thing in common. When you wake up, you feel horrible. You don't feel rested. You don't feel good. Oh, yeah, you slept 19 hours. You still feel miserable. Dream Powder is natural with natural things in it. Magnesium and melatonin, things like that. You drift off to sleep. It's a cup of hot chocolate. And when you wake up, you feel good. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Okay, look, that's enough of Daddy Jesse talking about a special election in Pennsylvania. Now we're moving on to Daddy Ryan. Joining me now, my buddy Ryan Gerdusky, who's never afraid to give you the truth right between the eyes. He's the host of A Numbers Game, which I would highly recommend. You'll sound so smart. Just steal all of his ideas like I do. Ryan, the special election in Pennsylvania. It's my understanding, buddy, that we've taken this county since the 1800s. Do I have that right?
Yes, it's the first time since 1850 that the state Senate seat has flipped, and Republicans have won it in every per president in every election except for 1964, where LBJ won it by 0.4% in his 46 state landslide. But yeah, it is a reliably Republican district and a reliably Republican county, and Republicans really screwed up.
Okay, Ryan. Let's break down the how and the why, because this is one of those things. I mean, I look at it and I just, my shoulders slump. I'm blown away at how complacent we are when Trump's name isn't on the ballot. What happened here? Did we have a bad candidate? Did they have a great candidate? Was it a money thing? What happened?
So it was kind of all the above. We had a really, they had a really good candidate, a former prosecutor and small town mayor. We had the countywide county commissioner who's deeply unpopular. Lancaster has a lot of debt right now because of a lot of spending, although he hasn't increased taxes. But he's super unpopular. This is a seat that he holds a seat that Democrats usually don't even throw a candidate against. He's run unopposed. People run unopposed, going back to 2011 when Republicans won it by 2-1. He barely won it the last time, which was I think in 2023. So naturally, they said, "Hey, let's run him in a not so competitive district, but let's run him again." And he was super complacent. Republicans had no early ballot chase operation to speak of. Democrats had an immense one. Democrats opened the election with several thousand, I think like 6,000 or 7,000 more votes in the early vote than Republicans did, and they won by 400 votes. That mattered a lot. And so it was complacency on the part of the party. It's a new party leader, so I give him some leeway because he's only been there for a few months. This was his first competition. Complacency, a bad candidate. Democrats had a super strong candidate. And listen, Democrats are the electorate of high propensity, college educated whites and a lot of seniors now. And Republicans, we've created this multiracial, multi-ethnic working class party, the ones that we wanted, who can win the popular vote in a presidential election. They just don't seem to vote when it's not a presidential election. And that's a big problem.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because my next question was going to be, I mean, it wasn't always this way where the filthy communists would turn out no matter what. We used to turn out no matter what in these special elections, and that has changed. Is this just simply a demographic problem? Old people vote every time, young people don't.
That's exactly right, Jesse. I mean, Republicans were the party that won special elections. I did a special election one time for a guy named Bob Turner, who replaced Anthony Weiner in a D+7 seat in New York City, and Republicans won it, and they won it by a big margin. And we could count on special elections to really pick up huge numbers. I don't think Scott Brown would win today if he was running in the same style of Massachusetts with Obamacare coming down the pipeline, if we had the same demographics. We just don't have that electorate anymore. And that's a problem. You either have to really engage people with deep social distrust of institutions who are lower information or lower commitment, who don't make politics their lives, or you have to somehow re-engage and have candidates who can win. Now, listen, I will sit there and say, in special elections so far this year, Republicans have done not so terrible. They won a very close one in Connecticut. They won another one in California. It's possible to still win them, but you have to work for it. And Republicans looked at this seat and said, "Oh, we don't have to work for it. It's an R+16, a Trump+16 seat. No problem. We're going to win it with our eyes shut." That's just not the way politics works in these special elections anymore, in these off-year elections. I think that's a seat we can win back in 2026 when it's up again, but Republicans are now just two seats shy in the state Senate of giving Democrats complete control of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which is what, the seventh biggest state in the country? Not a small place, not a place you just want to lose and give Democrats full control of. It's one of the last bastions of the entire Northeast that Democrats don't have full control of.
Yeah, it's also a place to get delicious Amish pastries and Amish butter. I would highly recommend if you're ever there, you do the same. Okay, Ryan, how did we lose old people? I'm fascinated by this demographic shift. I understand why working class people are drifting towards Republicans as Democrats become more and more snooty elitists who talk down to everybody. I get that. But old people, how did we lose them?
Old people changed because the old people that I grew up with, like, let's say you're a child of the 90s like me and you watched The Little Giants growing up, and the old people there were World War II veterans. They're all dead now. And the old people now are Jane Fonda. The old people now are people who I naturally would think of are in their 60s, but they're actually in their 80s now. And that's just who old people are now. Old people have changed in the last 15, 20 years. And they were the progressive of the Bill Clinton generation. They were the ones who, you know, many of them opposed the Vietnam War. A lot of them were the most progressive generation of their time. That's who old people are, because time has changed and time has gone on. And so the ones who we thought of as old people are, for the most part, gone now. And the ones who are left are, you know, the countercultural people. I mean, that's kind of how it happened. Part of it is that old people changed.
Ryan, you also run the 1776 Project PAC, of which I am a big fan and supporter. it involves, well, it's school board races. You're involved in school board races across the country. What are you seeing out there right now?
Well, we just won our first election in Maine, so that was exciting. But Wisconsin's April 1st. We have a ton. We have, I think, 28 candidates across the state. And then right after that, we have Texas is coming up in May. First week of May, I think. There's Texas. Tons of races over in Texas. We have Pennsylvania at the end of the year. Virginia's coming up. There's a lot of big and important states. And what I would say to people is this. A lot of Republicans are saying, Trump's in office. How great. We don't have to go crazy. We don't have to get wild. He's got everything going on. And I would say it's as good as having a great police chief who has corrupt cops. You can only do so much without foot soldiers on the ground who are making sure executive orders are attuned to or fought for. I'll give you a perfect example. In Kansas, in a conservative area, Trump area, there was a bill to sit there and carry out Trump's policies on DEI. It was in a conservative district, and it went down because one conservative flipped. Now, my PAC has promised to spend $20,000 to remove him from office in the upcoming election, and state representatives have also sat there and said they are going to campaign against this member of the school board. But members of school boards and local government are super important to carry out the things in your everyday life that the president's sitting there and trying to pursue via executive order. You can't have a great president and bad local officials and expect things to just get better. You have to have good local officials too.
Amen. I think you could argue they're a lot more important than the office of the presidency. Okay, so let's talk nationally. That was a lot of ugliness. What are we looking at nationally? Every time you wake up, there's a new poll showing Democrats are cratering in support. Jasmine Crockett, who I just adore, will not stop getting her face all over television. Republicans, even Trump himself, pretty high approval ratings for the modern era. But this is what I see. You see it differently. What do you see?
No, I mean, listen, Democrats are in a world of hurt right now. They're looking for a message. That doesn't mean they can't win in a 2026 midterm, given that low propensity voters don't show up as much. Showing up is everything. And as you talked about, Jesse, a lot on your show, especially in primaries, the ones who show up are the ones who decide elections. Why do we still have moderate Republicans in deep Republican counties? Because you don't show up in primaries. Yeah. But I will say that in the upcoming elections for the 2026 on a national scene, Republicans are not... We don't see the tide of a wave election coming up yet. I mean, in 2017, Democrats already had a 5-point lead in the generic ballot ahead of the 2018 election. Right now, they have about a 1-point, and the undecided vote is much, much smaller. There's a lot of open seats that we could sit there and take in the U.S. Senate. There's a lot of competitive elections in the House that Trump won last time that we could certainly win this time. And Democrats don't have the natural lead, but Republicans really have to get engaged very, very early in this cycle. And we'll see if that happens.
Ryan, everybody has an explanation for why Democrats are cratering. Everybody on the right has an explanation. Everyone on the left has an explanation. What's the Ryan Gerdusky explanation?
I think part of it is because they, on issues, don't follow in where the American people are. They really are the party of people that Americans just don't like. I mean, if you think that the dime store version of Cardi B, known as Jasmine Crockett, is who should be the face of your party, and people who are barely speaking English on a daily basis and just having awfuls in front of you who are lecturing you constantly... I think that you don't understand the mood of the people. And also the fact is that COVID really did change young people. According to the David Shore data, who's a Democratic data scientist, the most Republican demographic in the last election were white men between the ages of 18 and 20. People who lost out on high school, people who lost out on prom and sports games and social life and were stuck watching TikTok and Instagram are the most right-wing generation since the greatest generation that fought World War II. I don't think that it could be underestimated right now how badly COVID really affected them. And I'll say one other thing. The population loss that happened in COVID in Chicago, in LA, in New York, that was supposed to result in dozens of House seats lost from in 2030, that's probably been in half now. Like the amount of seats that we're going to lose is half of what they're probably going to lose because mass immigration has replaced the Americans that left. People have been moving to those places. Mass immigration stops Democrats from feeling the actual fallout from their failed policies. And I don't think that can be expressed enough. And it's not just illegal immigration, it is legal immigration. It needs to be emphasized over and over and over again how badly legal immigration keeps the Democratic Party propped up. They would probably be losing 3 to 4 seats in New York in the next redistricting and 4 to 5 in California. And they're probably going to lose 2 to 3 in each now.
Which is, of course, the entire point of filling up your country with barbarians. Cancel out the American patriot, who's your mortal enemy if you're a Democrat. Okay, Ryan, before I let you go, why should I give a crap about New Jersey other than the fact that I have friends there and they have delicious sandwiches?
You should give a crap about New Jersey because it's going to be America's next swing state. And if it becomes America's next swing state and Republicans have a chance of winning it, there is no chance of a Democratic president going to the White House again. Republicans have out-registered new voters in New Jersey every single month since 2022. The state has moved to the right in 3 consecutive elections, presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial. And I think there's a real chance that Democrats lead in New Jersey has gone down by over 250,000 votes, registered Democratic advantage. And it holds tons of congressional seats, tons of opportunity as far as making a new purple state for the election. And Jersey was a consistently Republican state from 68 to 88. It's been Democratic for 30 years now. There's no reason it can't be Republican again.
Ryan, thank you, my brother.
Absolutely.
All right. Senator Ron Johnson is going to join us next. I'm hearing some things I don't like about the budget that's coming. You know the senator's going to have some things to say about that. We'll talk to him in a moment. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you. Since the government's not going to save any money, let's save you some money. Switch your cell phone service to Pure Talk. People thank me for that. You realize that? When you switch to Pure Talk, one, you get to deal with Americans. No more dealing with boop, boop, and click, click. No, you get to speak to Americans who speak English. Because Pure Talk's the patriotic company that hires Americans, and they cut my bill in half. I had T-Mobile, 4 lines. I switched to Pure Talk. My bill's half of what it was. Same service, by the way. Same 5G network as the big guys. PureTalk.com/JesseTV saves you even more money, and it's cake. Keep your phone. Keep your number. Or get a new one if you want it. Switch. We'll be back. Well, there's a lot going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and I understand there's all kinds of shiny objects running here and there with signal chats and Houthis and all that, and I'm not dismissing any of those things, but kind of a big deal is the budget, and there's apparently, I was texting with a different senator, not Senator Johnson, last night, and I am not hearing good things about what's coming from D.C. Joining me now, great senator from the state of Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, I know you're already speaking out about this. The things I found out last night had me flat out crying in my evening coffee. What's happening?
Well, you got to tell me why you're crying in coffee. I actually think we're making some headway because we've dug our heels in here and let people know our heels are dug in until we have a realistic, a reasonable pre-pandemic spending level and a commitment and a process to achieve it.
Yes, Senator, but I don't hear that commitment from the House. I guess I should have clarified. The Senate seems to be okay. Apparently what landed on your desk from the House is not good.
No, and you know, Leader Thune knows full well that he shouldn't even bring that up for a vote because it won't even survive the motion proceed. And so we had a long conversation. He's fully aware of the options I've laid out. And again, just to simplify this, if you take a previous year's outlays, whether it's Clinton in 98, Obama in 2014, or Trump in 2019, leave Social Security, Medicare, and you can even leave Medicaid alone. Don't touch those. Just spend what we're spending in 2025. Increase the other total outlays for those years by population growth and inflation, you'd have total annual spending of somewhere between $5.5 and $6.5 trillion. So let's just talk about 2019. That's the $6.5 trillion. nobody can argue against the fact that if you spend what we spent in 2029 fully inflated for population growth and inflation, exempting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, that that's not a reasonable proposal. And quite honestly, we should not spend a dime more than that. And yet, the House resolution would take $7.3 trillion, which is what we're spending this year, knock off about $150 billion and say, oh, look, didn't we do a great job? And oh, by the way, we're going to increase the debt ceiling by $4 trillion. That ain't flying in the Senate. And now people know that.
Oh, praise God. How does a bill like this, how does the House, which we control, how do they even send something like this to your desk? I was told $1.5 trillion in cuts over 10 years, which of course is the old Washington gimmick that everybody watching understands never actually materializes.
Jesse, we don't I come from a manufacturing background, right? You don't have a good product without a good process. We do not have a good process for controlling spending in Washington, D.C. It's obvious. You know, the Budget Act of 74 set up all this insane, all these insane rules. That hasn't worked. The old way of doing things, by the way, by separating out discretionary spending, which is the only thing we appropriate versus mandatory, only 24% is actually appropriated now. 76% is on automatic spending. And most people think, well, that's Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. No, there's $1.3 trillion additional to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. It's grown from $642 to $1.3 trillion since 2019. We can do that in reconciliation. So again, I keep hearing my, you know, these brave members of our conference, well, we're not serious about cutting spending lists. We're willing to address those entitlements. No, you can literally ignore those, exempt them, and you can be at no more, not a dime more than $6.5 trillion. Personally, I would start with the Clinton budget, which passed 77-22 in the U.S. Senate. 77-22. We have current senators on both sides of the aisle that voted for that, okay? You start there, you're at 5.5, plus up for defense. That happened before 9/11, for vets. You're still no more than $6 trillion, which, by the way, was the Senate budget resolution. That was our aspirational goal in the, you know, the border security budget resolution that we passed. We should have done that, by the way. We should have broken this down into steps. I think President Trump got sold a bill of goods by the House. They can pass this one big, beautiful bill. I think that's a pretty risky bet right there when you understand the complexity of that and how difficult that's going to be to pass. So I would still recommend President Trump abandon that, embrace the Senate, get him his border security. The next step would be just extend the current tax code, take a massive automatic tax increase off the table, which, by the way, is there because we blew it in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. We allowed these things to automatically expire. We shouldn't do that. Easy fix for that. You just use current policy. There's no score for extending the current tax law. Okay? So, again this place is insane. I come from the private sector. You know, from my standpoint, this is an alternate universe.
Senator, I can sense your frustration. Senator, since we can't clone you, how do we ensure that future senators, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, how do we ensure that we can get any kind of fiscal sanity? Is there a solution? Is it a balanced budget amendment? Is there any rule you can put into place? Or as long as we send politicians to D.C., they're going to find a way to jack taxpayer money and hand it out to their friends?
If you're talking constitutional amendment, I would limit spending to a certain percent of GDP. But right now, the reason I'm pushing this panel, you know, a bicameral, so you have senators, you have House members, you have members of the administration, probably from OMB, sitting on a budget review panel, and you bring up the department heads, the secretaries, the CFOs, and you go line by line, 2,400 lines in the 2025 budget. You go line by line and just have the people explain, so why is this line item, you know, $1 billion higher than 2019 fully inflated for population and inflation? You know, why is it $1 billion over that level? Oh, you can't explain it? Well, you're not going to get that extra $1 billion. Cut that account. You do that 2,400 times. I'm not saying there's $1 billion in each one of those expenditure lines, but if there was, that'd be $2.4 trillion a year savings. Again, that's, you don't have $1 billion each line, but you go line by line. You put in the work, Jesse. We never look at 76% of the budget. It's on automatic pilot. You start there, bring it all in so at least we're looking at it, but look at it line by line. And just like in the private sector, and anybody who's ever been in management and had to go in front of a budget review committee, you know, if you're beating your numbers, it's a pretty comfortable meeting. If you're not beating your numbers, it's not going to be pleasant. And as I keep saying, in the private sector, this would be easy. If I would have told my managers, okay, listen, I'll let you increase your budget based on the number of customers you serve and inflation. Go ahead. 6 years later, if I come back and go, hey, you're 10% over that. What are you doing? If I don't fire you, I'm going to make sure that you dial back your spending to at least, you know, what I directed you to. So again, to me, this is such low-hanging fruit. This is painless, quite honestly, other than the fact you had to go line by line and get these, again, all the department heads justifying 2,400 lines of expenditures. It's work.
It's work. I appreciate you very much in what you're doing, Senator. Thank you. Please keep it up. He sends his frustration. Ron Johnson's like the nicest guy I know. He's ready to kill somebody. Anyway, we have more. Next.
Next, sir, we have a presidential memorandum for your attention. This memorandum requires the immediate declassification of all FBI files relating to the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. This was obviously one of the instances of the weaponization of law enforcement powers of prosecution against you and others. We believe that it's long past time for the American people to have a full and complete understanding of what exactly is in those files.
Which gives the media the right to go in and go and check it. You probably won't bother because you're not going to like what you see.
What are they going to see? Crossfire Hurricane. Seems like I've heard of that before. Joining me now to discuss it and where we might be going from here, Hans Mahnke, author of the book Swift Boating America, which I would highly recommend. Okay, Hans, refresh my memory. There's too many scandals, too many news stories. Crossfire Hurricane, what is it? And why are we declassifying things?
So Crossfire Hurricane was the investigation into the Trump campaign that was opened in July of 2016 by James Comey and his cabal. And that carried on all the way into May of 2017 when the Mueller people took over. So we're looking at about a year's worth of materials. Now, a lot of them have been released already. So this is kind of what I'm expecting this to be, is kind of filling gaps, tying up loose ends, kind of things like that. Now, when you look at the order that President Trump signed, it actually has some more details about, it refers to a list of things that's going to be released. So they kind of made it sound like everything is going to be released, but it's not going to be quite everything. There's a list, it's called the so-called binder. It was actually meant to be released in President Trump's first term. But then Mark Meadows kind of stopped that from happening, the chief of staff at the time. No one quite understands why that happened. But anyway, I think we're finally now at the point where we will see this binder, which is going to contain hopefully a lot of juicy information on that Crossfire Hurricane investigation.
Hans, what do we believe from all this? Because, look, you're never going to convince me that Barack Obama didn't authorize all these things, but that's what I believe. What do you believe?
Well, I believe that too. And the sad part about this release, and I'm not trying to kind of denigrate it or whatever. I'm always happy when stuff is released. This is good. But the sad part is we're only talking Crossfire Hurricane and only FBI. And the Barack Obama part doesn't pertain to Crossfire Hurricane and FBI. Now, specifically, we know that Obama was briefed by the CIA in July of 2016. That is before this investigation opened. And he was briefed on the fact that this was all Hillary Clinton's idea, that this was Hillary Clinton's campaign dirty trick, that she was the one who orchestrated it, that she was the one who decided to paint Donald Trump as a Russian agent. So Obama then, instead of shutting it down, he escalated it, he weaponized it. So he's completely behind it. Now, the problem is all the documents pertaining to that are CIA documents. And those are the ones I'd like to see.
Yeah, that sure would be interesting to know if America's foremost intelligence agency was involved in trying to stop the Republican nominee for president. That would be kind of a big deal. Anyway, Hans, let's shift gears. Michael Walls is on Fox News with all this signal chat stuff, saying things like this today.
So they want to focus on this. It's embarrassing, right. Yes.
We're going to get to the bottom of it. I just talked to Elon on the way here. We've got the best technical minds looking at how this happened. But I can tell you for 100%, I don't know this guy. I know him by his horrible reputation, and he really is the bottom scum of journalists. And I know him in the sense that he hates the president, but I don't text him. He wasn't on my phone. And we're going to figure out how this happened.
So you don't know what staffer is responsible for this right now?
Well, look, a staffer wasn't responsible. And look, I take full responsibility. I built the group. My job is to make sure everything's coordinated.
But how did the execute number? I don't mean to be pedantic here, but how did the number?
Have you ever had somebody's contact that shows their name, and then you have somebody else's number there?
Oh, I never make those mistakes.
Right? You've got somebody else's number on someone else's contact. So of course I didn't see this loser in the group. It looked like someone else. Now whether he did it deliberately or it happened in some other technical mean is something we're trying to figure out.
Okay, Hans, look, like I said earlier today, we made a mistake. It's a huge mistake. I'm ready to move on, but that answer is honestly a little bit confusing to me. It's my chat. I created it. It definitely wasn't a staffer. I also don't know the guy. We're investigating how he was added. Look, Jeffrey Goldberg may be a weapons-grade scumbag, but he's also not Jason Bourne. He didn't add himself to the chat. Someone did.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. I think it was a mistake going on Fox News. It's generally a mistake going on any news show or on any show to do with if you're in a legal situation to talk to anyone unless and until you have your story straight. And he obviously didn't have his story straight. And so I guess he was sent in there to kind of clean up the mess. And frankly, he made the mess even worse because, as you say, now it is sort of innuendo with Elon and hacking and this and that. And I agree, it makes no sense. What they should have done and what appears to have happened here, and I agree with you, is someone screwed up, whether it was Waltz himself or one of his people, someone screwed up. Someone got the wrong number, the wrong name in there. And then, you know, things took their course from there. So they should just own up, just said, we screwed up. We shouldn't have put this guy in there. We thought it was another JG, you know, the Goldberg, whatever. There's the U.S. Trade Representative. He's called Greer. Maybe it was him. I don't know. But just say it that, you know, there was someone else, JG, and they just got messed up. They screwed up and it won't happen again. And then don't talk about it anymore. What was the point in going on that Fox News show? And today as well, they just keep talking about it. Just say you own up to the mistake and then just don't talk about it anymore.
I'm getting frustrated. I've been frustrated the entire time. I'm frustrated no one was fired. Now I'm frustrated they're still talking about it. I do not think the Trump administration has handled this well at all. Big, big, big screw up, and I don't like it at all. Okay, moving past that. There's a judicial coup going on in the country where communist judges are stopping every meaningful thing the Trump administration tries to do. I know how I want it handled, Hans. How do you want it handled?
It's a difficult one. Now, I'm going to wear my lawyer's hat here. I don't fully disagree with the idea that judges should have the right to issue these sweeping injunctions, but of course in very particular circumstances. So the government starts rounding up anyone with Japanese heritage, you know, like they did 70, 80 years ago. That's when you need these people to step in. But of course, so that's the initial idea behind it. And then of course, it's been completely abused and now they just step in at any juncture and so on. So ultimately, I think it's gonna have to change. That means the court, the district court at the lowest level will have to get its wings clipped. And I think what will have to happen is that they will need to be told, so then the Supreme Court will need to step in, and hopefully they do at some point. You know, they've been kind of dragging their feet and just outline the circumstances in which the district courts, the lowest level of the courts, can step in and what they can do. So for starters, they should only be able to act on behalf of some clients that they actually have. So for instance, in this case of these Venezuelan gang members, there was actually five clients. And the government actually did everything as asked of them by the courts in relation to these five clients. The problem is that this judge, Boasberg, then kind of made it more sweeping. He said, well, it's not the five before me, yes, but I'm going to just apply it to everyone. And that's a big problem, or it's become a big problem. So I think the Supreme Court will just have to step in and kind of put in some boundaries, put in some fences here to make this more clear. Now, I'm not very confident that will happen because we got Roberts on the court and, of course, Amy Coney Barrett. So it's kind of more of a 5-4 liberal court than it is a 6-3 conservative court, as we're always told. So I think ultimately what will happen is that the Supreme Court will rein in some of these abuses, but not others. They'll kind of take a pick and choose approach, and they're probably not going to clip the wings of these courts in any kind of long-term fashion.
Hans, as always, thank you, my friend. All right, lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I have just been so happy lately with what I've seen from the Democrat Party. Because here's the truth. We have control right now. We have the House, we have the Senate, we have the presidency, and the American people they're generally going to chafe against whoever is in control. That's why the party in control generally loses so many seats in the midterms. The second someone else takes over, the American people choose somebody new, they eventually get tired of them, and then they switch and they go back the other way. But we have people like Maxine Waters who just continue to remind the American people why they were rejected to begin with.
If he wants to start looking so closely to find those who were born here and their parents were undocumented, maybe I ought to first look at Melania. We don't know whether or not her parents were documented. And maybe we better just take a look.
Melania's parents were legal, by the way. Melania's legal. But none of that matters. That's just so wonderful for us. Please keep talking, all of you. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.